is Jacqueline Lo from Grace That Reigns. Thank you for joining us for May Mondays. We are here to renew your wonder, and so this is the continuation of our online retreat schedule. This is week number 4, May 11th. Today we will continue with Bishop Gilmore as he presents the topic, Watch for Road Hazards, Sin and Barriers. Bishop Gilmore?
Thank you, Jacqueline. Thank all of you for joining us today. Sin is a hard subject to talk about these days. We have largely lost whatever sense of sin we had in the first place. Nothing that happens to us is our fault anymore. There is always someone else to blame. We no longer know how to say, I did it. It was my fault. I sinned. Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. We no longer know these words, and not just because they are in Latin. We no longer know them because they are no longer in our minds ever or in our hearts. For example, you will hear people say, I have anger problems because my mother did not breastfeed me. Or, I am dependent because my mother did breastfeed me. You see how it goes. Every problem we have, every fault in our character, every weakness or sin, all these we blame on somebody else. You will hear a girl excuse her promiscuity with the claim, I sleep with lots of men because my father did not love me, and I'm looking for a father's love. Or you will hear a guy who was unfaithful to his wife say, I'm still looking for that perfect woman because my mother walked out on us when I was a kid. And round and round and round it goes. And one of the side effects of this victim culture is that because we blame other people for our problems and weaknesses, we also tend to think somebody else should solve our problem for us. And there is a kind of perverse logic to that. My problems were caused by somebody else. Somebody else should solve them for me, therefore. They are not my responsibility. Thus, the entitlement culture goes with the victim mentality. Somebody owes me a living. Somebody owes me solutions to my problems. Somebody else will have to bail me out. But how do you suppose we get this way in the first place? It had to have a beginning somewhere. When Cain killed Abel in the book of Genesis, he excused himself by saying, Nobody ever told me I was supposed to be my brother's keeper. Where in the world did he pick that up? From his parents, of course. And from their original sin. Lounging in paradise, they came to think that this life is pretty good, but it could be better if we could just have everything our way. And so they helped one another to sin, that first sin. And Adam, what did he say? It's not my fault. She made me. And Eve, what did she say? It's not my fault. the serpent made me. And so it all began. They were selfish themselves, and they set the pattern for selfishness, unleashing the victim entitlement poison into our world. And this remains the great struggle of every human life. Self-centered people simply cannot be open to receiving the love the Lord Jesus came to give us. Selfishness is the beast within, no matter what our social scientists tell us. We have to stop blaming everyone else. We have to deal with it ourselves. The Confiteor at the beginning of each Mass is the refreshing antidote to the victim entitlement poison. And the place where we do that, where do you suppose that is? The place where we do that in the most down-to-earth way possible is in our own personal prayer, when we seek union with the only one who can really free us from this beast within. The land was cursed, the book of Genesis tells us, was cursed after that first sin. In sorrow you shall eat of it, the book says. Thorns and thistles will grow from it, the book says. The very earth itself, which was to be the object of all our loving care, came back to bite them. It yielded flowers of evil, to borrow a line from the French writer Charles Baudelaire. What happened in the ground was only an external reminder of the internal chaos in the man, in the woman, and in their children. The moral evil of the sin had undeniable physical consequences. In making sense of these over the years, the early Christians meditated often on 1 John chapter 2, verse 16. And the next generations after them, they thought often of the teaching about the seven capital sins. We who live on the same abused earth, we still have to deal with these evil flowers. What were our ancestors talking about? Simply put, it was the root of sin. What I called selfishness above before, the early Christians called an inordinate self-love, a love of self run amok, and sheer egoism. This is the root of all sin. It is the hidden thing deep inside each of us, twisting back on itself again and again to create a holy, unfixable mess. St. John, in that passage from his first letter, spoke of three lusts: the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, a kind of lust for domination. The first meant an out-of-control desire for all that would preserve us and our kind. This one evil flower of inordinate sensual love gave rise to gluttony and to lust. The second meant an out-of-control desire for all that can please the sight, This gave rise to a feverish desire for money, wealth, for all those things that made it possible for us to amass worldly goods. From this was born the vice of avarice and of greed. And the third meant an out-of-control desire for our own excellence and of all that could secure it for us in the eyes of others and emphasize it at any cost. From this were born vanity and envy and anger, hardness of heart, and other such things. Concupiscence, another word for that kind of lust that St. John spoke of, concupiscence remains in us after baptism. It is a remnant of the original sin. It remains in us as something of a wound, still tender, still healing. This unhealed part of us remains even after the sin has been forgiven. These weaknesses are not yet sins, properly so called. These weaknesses we call the capital sins or the deadly sins, pride, sloth, envy, anger, avarice, gluttony, and lust. These give rise to many other disorders in our lives. These are the sources of our own personal sins. They tend to hold us back from God, and they tend to damage the relationship with our neighbor, especially those who are closest to us. So, how do we get from the brokenness Adam and Eve left us, from the weaknesses, to the actual sin itself? This is a great mystery, friends, and it is hidden in a great darkness. There is next to no light in evil. Evil is a black hole. It is an absence where something should be. St. Augustine and a group of his friends once stole some pears, not because they were hungry, but just because they were there, just because they could, just to torment the farmer who chased them off his property, just to destroy them. And it haunted Augustine for the rest of his life. I stole a watch once, and it had the same effect on me. It was on a display table in the aisle of a department store, and I passed by it countless times, it now seems. That watch spoke to me somehow. It called me by name, if you will. I had to have it. My inner weaknesses finally won the day, and I slipped it into my pocket, and the pear was off the tree. Now, we had clocks in my house. I didn't need that watch. We were not a rich family, but not a poor family either. We had money. Even I had money. I knew about the Ten Commandments, about thou shalt not steal, that I was not to take what did not belong to me. But in and out of that store several times, I was thinking about that watch a lot, you see. I was not overcome by a sudden tornado of emotion. No momentary blinding passion was there. I knew it was wrong, as Augustine knew his theft was wrong, and he and I, we did it anyway. I knew that I should have walked out of that store, but I chose to look away from this right thing to do. I was standing there on the edge of sin, and it was then that I blinked. I closed my eyes just long enough to jump. That blink is how weakness turns into sin. That choice not to look at the right thing, that choice to listen only to the wrong thing, that's what tipped the balance for me in that store. I see that clearly enough now, but 70 years of thinking about it has still not helped me understand what caused that blink. The only saving thing for me was that I was stricken by what I had done. I was overcome by guilt. I was filled with remorse. I literally hated that watch. I hardly ever wore it. I threw it away as soon as I could. But innocence had already been lost on that day. Floodgates were already opened on that day. My history of sin began on that day. A history I shall not share with you, because it would be too demoralizing for you. Just know that I know too. That sin was like a splinter lodged in my soul. The longer it was there, the fouler it became. It festered, and the poison spread. I knew I had to get it out, but I shrank from trying. It will hurt, I thought. Yes, it will. I would be embarrassed to tell somebody else, I thought. Yes, you would. I don't have enough courage yet to do this. No, you don't. I knew I had to own up to it somehow. Take the blame for it, and confess it to another. It was not enough for me to do it secretly before God. I had already done that. Something more had to be done. My sin was public, there on my little stage of the world, public because it harmed someone else in that big and faceless corporation, and I had to make it right. Confession is a sacrament, you see. We have it because the Lord chose to give it to us and because the Lord wants us to use it. But it is also born out of some deep need in us to tell someone else. You see this all the time. You see this in so many different places. Kitchen tables provide more than nourishment to a hurting neighbor. Water coolers at work give us a place where we can tell someone else why we don't like our boss. Psychologists make a living out of being the someone to whom we can tell things. Priests do this too, in a sacrament that has fallen on hard times. It is a sacrament of whispers, confession is. It is one man or one woman putting into words the sorrow that weighs upon them. This is the confession itself. And doing so in the presence of another man who was sent by the Lord Jesus. One man whispers his sorrow. Another man listens with a discerning heart. And then he, too, whispers the words of forgiveness. This is what we call absolution. When that happens, the priest fades away, and it is the Lord Jesus himself who is doing the hearing, the understanding, and the forgiving. Other sacraments have water, or oil, or bread and wine, or the laying on of hands. This sacrament has a conversation in a low voice, has sorrow and penance and absolution, all in whispers. Things that are truly important are usually whispered. It is a sacrament of the fresh start, confession is. Sins are forgiven, removed, forgotten, destroyed. We start again with a clean slate. We take up the task of living with renewed energy, brimming over with confidence. If the sacrament of penance tells us that we cannot fix it ourselves, and it does say this, it also tells us that we never have to face our sin alone. Evil is a fact of life in a fallen world, but the final victory over sin has already been won in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. We have to live that out over the course of our lifetime, but each confession brings us ever closer to that final victory. We sometimes hear it said, in the course of an illness, when somebody comes out of the hospital, we sometimes hear it said, "Did he get it all?" No, unfortunately. Confession is not an operation with a high-flying surgeon. Sometimes such a surgeon does get it all. But our problem goes deeper than any physical cancer. Sin is like a cancer. It grows wildly, but it is not at all a physical thing. It is a spiritual thing, and when it is forgiven, traces are generally left behind. The effects of it are left behind in our memories, in our imaginations, in our minds, in our wills. A proneness to sin remains, and so the spiritual life remains a struggle. The flesh, the world, and the devil remain always against us. Only the Lord can heal these deep weaknesses that remain with us. And he can do so only if we allow him into these darker regions of our soul. It takes two for this tango. If we are convinced that only he can do this, and that he wants us to let him work in us, if we are convinced of this, we are brought back to our original starting point, our personal prayer each day. When we are faithful to daily prayer, the Lord soon becomes more and more active in our lives, inviting us into the love that surpasses all understanding, inviting us into the only love that can heal us permanently. Those who do not pray daily and consistently, will not pass into this deeper relationship with the Lord. They will dabble around the edges when a religious feeling strikes them or when they're in the mood, but most of the time, these things will not happen. Most of the time, they will drift away from the one point of entry into that love of Jesus Christ. We have to give him the chance to work within us in prayer, and these persons never give him that chance. Those who pray daily, come hell or high water, are practicing real selflessness in their lives. As they do that, they are showing him that they are indeed serious about letting him into their lives, even if those times of prayer are most of the time all distraction. Prayer is about him, about his will. It is not about us. Day by day, then, he will intervene more and more in our lives if we let him in. He does this because he loves us and he wants to set us free. Thank you, friends, for listening today.
Thank you very much, Bishop Gilmore. That was a very thoughtful and thorough message on sin. I'm sure it leads to various barriers within us that we need to work on. And so I invite you this coming week to listen to another reflection later on barriers. So this is Jacqueline Lowe and
Bishop Gilmore
at Grace That Reigns. And we want to bid you a good day. Thank you for joining us online for our online retreat schedule called Watch for Road Hazards, Sin and Barriers. We are www.gracethatreigns.com.